could, if you're the petitioner or the appellant in the matter, let us know how much time you like to reserve for rebuttal. You can reserve as much as you choose. First case on the docket is Fairfax County Government and Victoria Monroe.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jamie Greenswag, and I represent Fairfax County in this matter. I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Your Honors, this is a pretty straightforward case of undisputed facts, and we don't usually have that in a workers' compensation context. But like I said, they are in large part undisputed. There was some pre-existing animosity that existed between Sergeant Powell and Victoria Monroe being the claimant in this case. There was some issue that came up, and she initiated a conversation with Sergeant Powell on December 14, 2012 regarding some changed padlocks for wildlife equipment, her being the county biologist. The conversation that they had quickly escalated. They began to argue with one another, her raising her voice. Maybe he raised his voice as well. That's really kind of inconsequential. It's her conduct that we're looking at here. As they continued to argue, she again escalated the argument by referring to him as a jerk, calling him a jerk, and as the claimant points out in her brief, she paused for a minute before doing so, and even having that moment to reflect and to consider whether or not she should de-escalate the argument, disengage, or otherwise remove herself from the situation, she chose not to. She calls him a jerk, in response to which he calls her, and forgive my language, but the facts of the case are that he calls her a bitch. In response to that, she, in her own words, in an unthinking, angry manner, rolls her chair towards him, intentionally and deliberately rolls her chair towards him and grabs his knee. Now, whether or not she intentionally grabs his knee or accidentally grabs his knee, again, is inconsequential, and that's one of the minor facts that's in dispute, but again, I would assert to you that that's immaterial and inconsequential. The fact is that she does grab his knee, whether it's because the chair is unbalanced or because she had rolled forward towards him with such momentum that she had to stop herself. In response to that, he pushes her back about a foot in her estimation. She doesn't hit anything. She stands up on her own volition, clenched fists, and anger, rage is coursing through her, as it has been apparently for this entire exchange. And they argue about whether or not they're going to report it to the Internal Affairs Division. Ultimately, they both report it to Internal Affairs, so there's an investigation and sustained findings of essentially unprofessionalism are found against both Powell and Monroe. And again, during this entire exchange, there was never an attempt by Monroe, or frankly by Powell, to disengage, to de-escalate the argument, or to remove themselves from the situation. And it was Monroe, the claimant in this case, who continuously escalated it, first by name-calling, and then by rolling over towards him in a physical manifestation of continuing the confrontation. In her brief, the claimant describes her conduct as a physical manifestation.
Counsel, I believe that, sure. I appreciate you telling us about the facts and the circumstances that existed between the individuals involved here, but essentially this case strikes me as one involving the standard of review. And in this case, it seems that the confrontation arose out of some dispute over the locks. In other words, they weren't arguing over what somebody had for lunch, but it was a work-related circumstance that caused the original engagement between the parties.
That's right.
And while obviously we could all look at this evidence in a different way, the commission found that the claimant's theory of what happened was more subject to credibility than the other person involved in the dispute. With the highly deferential standard that we're required to apply in cases like this with regard to factual findings, are we essentially stuck with the result of the commission?
No, Your Honor. And I would agree with you that this argument did arise in the context of an argument about a work-related issue. Mm-hmm. But the other issue that has to be examined in this case is whether or not the claimant, was an innocent victim. And she has the burden of proving that she was an innocent victim, not an instigator, not an aggressor, not a willing participant. She has the burden of proving that she was an innocent victim in order to prove that the accident arose in the course and scope of employment. and whether or not the claimant has met her burden of proving that an accident has arisen out of the course and scope of employment is a mixed question of fact and law, which is reviewed de novo by this court. And I would submit to you, Your Honor, that neither the Deputy Commissioner nor the full commission examined the issue of whether or not Ms. Monroe proved that she was an innocent victim in this course of events on December 14, 2012. And I would submit to you that from the facts found, which are essentially undisputed, there's no way to find that she was an innocent victim. She was clearly, at the very least, a willing participant.
Let me ask you this. And the reason why I'm going to ask you these questions is I want you to take me through the continuum. Is the claimant's initiation of the conversation regarding the locks, does that make her responsible?
You know, I don't know if her, frankly, I don't think that an initiation of a conversation regarding locks would make her a participant in an altercation. But from there, we get to an argument.
Okay, so and according to the record, as I understand it, there was some angst or problem between these two individuals before, so
that's right.
That I read it. So she's asking him about the locks, which you sort of recognize is a work-related issue.
Right.
And so there's a conversation about the locks being changed, and she's a supervisor and he's a subordinate of some sort, I kind of get the impression.
I think that they're on the same level of a hierarchy, but they're in two different sections, but there's clearly a debate about who outranks whom, and, okay.
So now we have a conversation that ensues, and there's some words exchanged, and it's clear from the record that the claimant wants to call him a nasty word.
That's right.
But she hesitates.
That's right.
At which point the commission found, and whether I agree with this or not, from a factual basis, the other person involved escalates the conversation and finds that the touching of the knee when she apparently rolled her chair over there was accidental. We would have to discount all of that evidence to get to the result that you want, wouldn't we?
I don't believe that you do, and here's the reason. Because I would submit to you that the facts, again, are not in dispute. She did pause. She paused before calling him a jerk. But ultimately, she did call him a jerk before he threw a name back at her. And as the deputy commissioner said, you really don't need to get into the weeds here in terms of which is worse, calling somebody a jerk or calling somebody a bitch, or, you know, what's the greater offense. The fact is they were engaged in clearly a very heated dispute, an argument, and she says in her own words, I rolled my chair over. There wasn't some ghost-like involuntary force which compelled her chair towards Sergeant Powell. She intentionally committed that act. And like I said, the full commission just fails to address, and as does the deputy commissioner, this innocent victim issue. Neither of them get to it, and frankly, I don't know why. It seems like they just kind of missed the ball on this and decided it based on the fact that it was an argument about employment alone that was sufficient, but it's not. They have to look at whether or not she's an innocent victim, and she wasn't. Like I said, I think that she was aggressor all along the way. She's the one that started the name-calling. She's the one that started the physical confrontation by rolling over towards him and grabbing his knee. He says he thought she was going to slap him or kick him. That's inconsequential. The deputy commissioner didn't believe him when he said that, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they believed he was credible or not.
How do you deal with the specific language from the case of Adams versus Hercules that you, I believe, both cited, where it says, whether an employee is guilty of willful misconduct is a question of fact to be resolved by the commission, and the commission's finding is binding on appeal if supported by credible evidence. That's Adams versus Hercules at 463.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, whether the accident arises out of the employment is the issue here. And that's a mixed question of fact and law. And it seems kind of odd that whether or not she's an innocent victim, whether that would be a question of whether it arises out of the employment, but that's how the case law phrases it. If she wasn't an innocent victim, then it did not arise out of the employment. And that's why you all should look at it from that perspective.
Okay. Counsel, you're in your rebuttal time. You can keep going. You can choose, or you can save the rest for rebuttal.
I would just continue briefly by saying that the deputy commissioner found specifically that the claimant acted unprofessionally and her behavior reflected carelessness and negligence. Based on those findings alone, they can't have also found that she was an innocent victim. And I would like to reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is David Vermont. I'm the counsel for the appellant Victoria Monroe. Judge, we do have largely undisputed facts, but the interpretations of those facts are heavily and hotly disputed. What we have here is a situation where Your Honor pointed out there was an animosity between these two people going on, and it goes back a long way. One of the other animal control officers that worked there, Forrest Higginbotham, came in and testified about Sergeant Powell's demeanor around the office. Sergeant Powell is a 6'5", 300-pound man who uses his size and his body language and his tone of voice to intimidate all the other people in the office, including the other animal control officers. Mr. Higginbotham gave specific examples of how that is and how he stands up over him during a meeting and talks down to him while he's sitting down in order to, and uses a stern tone of voice in order to control how they behave. There's
assuming for the sake of discussion that he's a bully, and I'm not saying that he is, but let's assume for the sake of discussion that he's a bully. Does it entitle the claimant to essentially involve herself in a contentious environment of workplace?
That's an excellent point, Your Honor. Let's look at what happened during the situation. She sees Mr. Powell come in that day. He's just had twins. He's in a very good mood. He's leaving early that day to go home and take care of his kids. He's laughing and joking.
Had twins and wants to go home. That doesn't sound like an exciting thing.
I guess they were still infants. So he wants to go home, and he's laughing and joking with the other people. So having a reputation with him and having had altercations with him in the past where he's told her cookies taste like shit, he's told her that the job of the county biologist, the money is wasted on them, a trained monkey could do her job. Those are things he's told her in the past. She knows he's hostile to her, so she sees him in a good mood. So she says, he's in a good mood today, let me use this opportunity to talk to him, right? So she's purposely noticing he's in a good mood, trying to avoid a new confrontation with him. And it doesn't happen that as soon as she asks him, they're sitting in cubicles across from each other. And she turns her cubicle to the door. As soon as she asks him, he spins around in his cubicle and he says, you don't have any business knowing that stuff because the lieutenant told me I'm not supposed to talk to you about it, right? And then she doesn't just automatically all of a sudden call him a jerk. If you read the testimony, what she says is, she goes, why are you acting unprofessionally? Can't we just talk? Can't I just ask you a question? And she repeats that multiple times. She's trying to coax him into just having a normal conversation with him. And when she does that, when she's asking him to be professional, he says, why are you acting holier than thou? Who are you to act holier than thou? She's not engaging in an argument. She's imploring him, let's just be professional
Let's take a look at the standard in the case of Brockway versus Eastern. I'm going to articulate for you so you don't have to dig it out. It says, to prevail on the defense of willful violation of a safety rule, employer must prove that, one, the safety rule was reasonable. I think we can all agree that, you know, having employee harmony and all that is reasonable. The rule was known to the employee. There's nothing in the record to suggest that your client didn't know about the rule. The rule was promulgated for the benefit of the employee. Obviously, we don't want fights in the workplace. And here's a critical one. The employee intentionally undertook the forbidden act. Now, if we take the facts even as you state them, where the employee, the claimant here, knew that this person was hostile, knew that this person was likely to involve himself in an escalated altercation, why does she get to sort of divorce herself from the circumstance when one could reasonably argue that she's the initiator of the disagreement?
She's not an initiator of the disagreement. She's an initiator of a conversation. He's the one that turns it into a disagreement by immediately attacking her. And then as it escalates, she says, can't we act professionally? Can't we talk? And then he says, you're being holier than thou. And she says, you're being a, and she stops herself. Again, it shows, yeah, it's consistent. She shows she's trying to avoid a confrontation with him. And he says, I'm being a what? Go ahead, say it. And then she goes, you're being a jerk. And you have to look at that statement in context of what she was doing. And what she was doing, she's imploring him to stop acting like a jerk. She's asking him, can't we be professional? Stop what you're doing, let's just talk. The rule we're talking about here doesn't bar, employees still have to have conversations. When you're talking about in the standard, engaging in the forbidden act, that's when it's like a safety rule that you're not allowed to do something that's outright dangerous or something like that. Here, this is just a raw standard of being professional in the office. And she was trying to be professional. She's imploring him to please be professional. Then he goes, he doesn't just call her a bitch. He goes, you're a bitch. And then he goes, you're a bitch. He says it to her twice and emphasizes it the second time. And she did roll her chair towards him. And she says, if you look in the transcript, I cite the section for you, where she says, I rolled closer to him to see what was going on, to see it, to understand it better. And it's very odd phrasing that she has, to see it. Right? She's not saying to see, there's nothing to see. It's not, he's not showing her something. He called her a name. See there means to understand. She was so taken aback by what happened. She didn't understand how all of a sudden this had jumped to the level
that
he's calling her a name.
Doesn't that stretch believability that you've got an irate 6'5", 300-pound man, and she's just going to roll up on him to understand what he's saying?
First of all, they were pretty close to each other at this point. They were both in the doorways of their cubicle, so she's not rolling across the room. She literally moves her chair a foot closer, right? And what she's saying, if you read that unusual language that she uses in that section, it's clear that even to this day, because she's a small woman, she's 5'1 and 145 pounds, she doesn't understand how after she's taken all these precautions, she's waited for him to be in a good mood, she's implored him, please don't, let's talk, let's just get this done. And why is he going right there so fast? And then counsel says it doesn't matter that whether she didn't grab his knee. The commissioner found, and everyone agrees, that she touched it and then she took her hand immediately off, right? And then he tells you that he didn't feel any pain, it didn't make a sound, it didn't roll back, it didn't do anything like that. There was absolutely no physical repercussions of her touching him. And that again goes back to prove what she was saying, that she was trying to avoid a situation and she was just balancing herself because the old chairs were old and rickety on the rolling chairs. And that she wasn't, if she was trying to be angry and hit him and come at him aggressively, you would have heard a sound. You would have heard.
But you say she was trying to avoid the situation, and for me, it's almost counterintuitive that you're going to roll closer to someone to avoid the situation.
I agree, Judge. It is counterintuitive. Again, read that one section of the transcript where she tells you why she rolled forward. She's still, to this day, confused and upset and emotional about what happened, right? Because he took what was supposed to be an innocent conversation, and he escalated it into this argument. And she still to this day doesn't understand why he dislikes her so much and picks fights with her. And what she's doing is simply trying to have a conversation about work, about something that she needed to know. And he, as with his reputation in the office, is intimidating her and picking on her and literally tossing his weight around. And finally, one last important point. The commissioner saw him do it at the hearing. When he's testifying, he's reading notes. And I noticed that he was testifying directly from his notes. And I said to the deputy commissioner, I said, he has notes, he can't just read notes, and he's gotta testify from memory. And the commissioner said, are you reading notes? And he goes, yes. And before the county attorney could say anything, before the commissioner could rule on it, he took them off. I said, I'd like to see him rip them off the page, and he threw them and goes, here, right? And the flash was right there. How quickly he gets angry and how he treats people and what his attitude is.
So you say it became a demeanor or credibility call that the fact finder made.
Absolutely. The court was, and the court even, the commissioner says in his opinion, we watched his demeanor carefully. And he is a guy who uses his big size and his deep voice and his authority, and he pushes himself around. That's the kind of guy he is. And she did everything she could to avoid a confrontation with him. And the whole time, it's him who's escalating the conversation. She doesn't just call him a jerk. She says, why are we acting? Why can't we act professionally? Why can't we just talk about it? He's the one who says her requests to be professional are her being holier than thou. And then she tries to stop herself. He eggs her on. She still implores him, stop being a jerk. Why are you being a jerk? Right? And then the situation escalated, right? And again, I point you to that one section. Read that one section where she still, to this day, doesn't understand why he acts like that.
Well, counsel, all of these issues that you discuss so specifically have already been heard by the commission. And the commission, because they are findings of fact, of course, we all know here what kind of effect that has on this court, ultimately, as we receive the evidence. So all you're doing is rehashing. Basically, they've already concluded, the commission has already concluded that she was not the aggressor. I mean, that's a fact-finding issue.
That's exactly
is that
right.
Not correct?
That's exactly right, Judge.
Follow up on Judge Chafin's question, if the deputy commissioner had made a factual finding adverse to your client, would you be stuck?
If, well, It might depend on which factual finding you're referring
to. That she was the aggressor and she had created the hostility in the workplace.
I don't think so, except for the incident with the chair.
I think you got to say yes on that.
Well, I think I admit that the incident with the chair, when she moves the chair forward, that's the only gray area where you could take it one way or the other, which is why I put that quote in her testimony in my brief, and it's why I referred you to it, right? Because you can see from reading that quote, she did not form any intent to hurt him or do anything, and that's why the fact that she touched his knee for an instant when she was trying to balance herself versus grabbing his knee is an important distinction. Because if she touches it and goes away, she's clearly not intending to hurt him or threaten him or hit him or anything like that. If she's grabbing him and trying to be having a physical altercation with him, that's something different. Sergeant Powell admits in his testimony, she didn't hit me, she didn't make a noise, didn't move me back, it didn't hurt, didn't cause any pain. There's no dispute that when she touched him, it was only for an instant. She immediately pulled her hand away, right? And so while that one section with the chair, when you're interpreting that section, you look at her testimony and look at what happened with the touch. That is consistent with her being confused, with her being insulted by this man, with her being trying to avoid an altercation, and the touch being an accident. It's not an intentional act by her.
Well, obviously, the commission had to conclude that it was accidental.
Right, and that's stated specifically in his
opinion. Is yet another point of their fact-finding in reference to the conclusion. Is that not correct?
That's correct, Judge. And again, it's stated specifically in the Deputy Commissioner's opinion.
All right, counsel, thank you. About 5:40, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would implore you all to look at the case of Stillwell v. Lewis Tree Services, which is at 47 VAF 471, 2006 case from this court, finding that the injury did not arise out of the claimant's employment because he was the aggressor in the fight with his coworker. So again, I think that with respect to the standard of review, this is an issue that you all should look at from a de novo standard. And even if you don't, I'd like you all to ask yourselves whether or not, from the facts that were found by the commission with respect to this incident, is it possible to find that Ms. Monroe was an innocent victim in this case?
But wasn't Stillwell, the case that you just cited, counsel, a case that again turned on the facts? It says the commission could reasonably have concluded from these facts that the claimant, by striking the first blow, initiated the physical confrontation. In other words, the commission made a factual determination that this court said was a reasonable one, and so we're stuck with it.
Yeah, but so the facts of the incident and whether or not those facts dictate that the claimant has a status of an innocent victim or the status of a willing participant, I think are two different things. And again, as I think you all have alluded to, the fact with respect to whether or not Ms. Monroe was an innocent victim here, even if you look at it from a different standpoint, is there credible evidence to support a finding that she was an innocent victim? And I would submit to you that there's not. And you know, frankly, I'm not here to argue that Mr. Powell's a good guy or that he was a nice guy, that he's not a bully. You know, his actions with respect to this incident were horrendous. They were deplorable. He acted unprofessionally, but that's not the issue. The issue here is specifically whether or not the claimant met her burden of proving that she was an innocent victim, which she's required to do. And she isn't. She was the instigator. She had time to pause, to leave the situation, and she just doesn't do it. And again, whether or not she voluntarily touched his knee or not, she voluntarily initiated a physical confrontation when she deliberately rolled her chair over. And you heard from claimant's counsel that was the deliberate act. There was no mistake about whether or not that was voluntary or involuntary. She deliberately rolled her chair over. So to the extent that the commission finds that her act of initiating a physical confrontation by rolling her chair over was deliberate or not, I think there's no credible evidence to support any such finding. Again, they just fail to address this innocent victim issue, and I think that, frankly, they missed the ball on it and that they didn't think to address it because they thought they were done with it once they decided that it was an argument that arose related to employment-related issues.
Getting back to your point on Stillwell, and I'm looking at some of the language in Stillwell, and it's interesting language. It says, where a claimant's injuries are incurred during the fight with another, employee. These injuries, quote, arise out of the employment only if the fight was, quote, not a mere personal nature or personal matter, but grew out of a quarrel over the matter of conducting the employee's business. I think it's clear that the original discussion here was about the locks, that were an employer, a workplace-related issue. It wasn't a personal matter, I don't like you, you don't like me. The conversation was initiated regarding those locks, which then puts it clearly situation regarding the conducting of the employer's business, doesn't it?
No, Your Honor, that's only the first part of the inquiry. It's essentially a two-part inquiry. One was an employment-related discussion or argument that they were having, and the second part of that inquiry is whether or not she was an innocent victim
Responsible, whether she was responsible for the assault, I think is the language that's used in the case.
Right, right. And so there's other case law that kind of has similar language, using the words instigator, aggressor, willing participant. Those are the terms that they use. But that's a legal question of whether or not, do these facts create a status in the claimant, which is an innocent victim? Or do these facts make her a willing participant or an instigator? One of those.
If the commission found that your client, that the claimant, not your client, but the claimant was responsible for the fight, would you win as a matter of fact or as a matter of law?
As a matter of law, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because under those circumstances, the claimant would not be an innocent victim, and therefore, as a matter of law, she wouldn't have met her burden of proving that the injuries arose out of the employment.
That was,
and if
that was the right answer.
And if you all have any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you very much for your time.
We'll come down and greet counsel.